Hi, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, where I explore the science of health, human performance, and ultimate potential. My name is Dr. Greg Wells, and I'm a scientist with a PhD in human physiology. I have served as a professor in kinesiology at the University of Toronto and as a scientist in translational medicine at SickKids Hospital. I've also worked with dozens of Olympic-level athletes through the Canadian Sports Centre Network. In this podcast, I do my best to take complex research and make it understandable and actionable for you to improve your health and well-being and perform to your true potential at whatever it is that you care about the most. In each show, I chat with leading experts in the field of productivity, sleep, nutrition, physiology, and psychology, as well as some of the most exceptional performers across all disciplines. Together, we explore the amplifiers that propel us towards high performance and overcome the obstacles that challenge us. Ultimately, I want to share 1% gains that can make a massive difference in your life. Thank you for listening in, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Let me know your thoughts and comments on social at Dr. Greg Wells. All right, let's dive in. In today's podcast with Dr. Ivan Joseph, I discuss strategies and tactics for building a healthy, high-performance mindset. Dr. Ivan Joseph is a renowned author, speaker, and educator with a passion for empowering individuals to reach their full potential. He's the author of the best-selling book, You've Got This, The Skill of Confidence, which has received critical acclaim for its practical and relatable advice on how to build self-confidence and achieve success in all areas of life. Dr. Joseph has a PhD in sport and exercise psychology from the University of Ottawa, and he has over 20 years of experience in the field of sports psychology. He has worked with athletes of all levels, from amateur to professional, and has helped them to improve their performance, build self-confidence, and achieve their goals. He's also worked with corporate leaders, entrepreneurs, and performers to help them build resilience and achieve success in their respective fields. Dr. Joseph is a sought-after speaker, having given presentations at conferences, events, and organizations around the world. He's known for his ability to deliver engaging and practical presentations that inspire and empower audiences to take action and achieve their goals. He's also a regular contributor to various media outlets, including the Globe and Mail, Huffington Post, and Psychology Today, where he writes about topics related to self-confidence, motivation, and achieving success. In today's show, we discuss tactics for managing stress, setting and achieving targets, and harnessing the power of positive thinking. Overall, he provides actionable insights and advice and inspiration for you if you want to improve your mental and emotional well-being. And we all want that. And we all want to have a lot more success in our personal and professional lives. And that is exactly what we dig into, especially in the context of what everyone's been through over the last few years. So we've had Dr. Joseph on the show. We wanted to bring him back and dig deeper into some more specific tactics. So that is what we are going to do today. Really excited about it. And let's dive into it. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Ivan Joseph. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. And Dr. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us. It is great to be with you again.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me, Dr. Wells.
Many of our listeners will be familiar with you, but for those of you who have not met you before, if you could maybe just give us the origin story. We've had you on the show. It's great to see you. And we've been discussing going deeper on specific issues. And you were so kind to agree to come back. And we'd love the backstory. We'd love to hear how'd you get into the fields and the work that you're doing.
Yeah, you know, I'm a PhD sports psychologist. So my research is in the topics of confidence, grit, and resilience. I was a varsity athlete when I went to the States. I met it with some obstacles. I had a challenging time with a coach. It kind of impacted my belief in myself. I decided to research that and see how it led to higher performance. The more I read, the more I learned, the more I realized that confidence isn't related just to the sport world. It's related to everything we do. There's global confidence, and what we believe and what we tell ourselves and what we think about ourselves really impacts how we perform in and out of the classroom, in and out of the corporate office, in and out of the pitch, whatever it might be in any arena in life. And so I've taken that. I wrote a book about it. I did a TED talk that, you know, blew up and went viral. And it's kind of led me onto the world of doing more research and having more conversations and working with lots of corporate clients and trying to share that message.
That's fantastic because it fits into exactly what we do, what we talk about, and what we explore. Coming into this year on the podcast, we are trying to be super tactical. We are really digging into the nuts and bolts of how we accomplish and how we succeed in very difficult, uncertain environments. And one of the themes that both you and I are running up against quite a bit in the people that we work with and the organizations that we try to help is the idea of overwhelm and burnout. So I was wondering if you could explore that a little bit further for us and help us understand any tactics that you might be applying or that you're recommending to people in order to help us to pivot from this burnout state to a state of recovery, regeneration, and recharging.
Yeah, and I imagine, Greg, a lot of your listeners might be like myself. They're high performers. They don't really get burnout. Like, that doesn't happen to them. And I remember I was doing a strat plan. I wasn't feeling the excitement. In fact, my consultant said, wait, well, you're not the same person I saw 10 years ago. What's happened? And I felt it. There wasn't any magic in it. And I could just feel it, not just there, but in different areas in my work. And of course, being the researcher, I went to the books. I said, hey, Google, tell me about burnout. And it talked about, this lack of, like, I'll say self-efficacy in the projects that you're doing, a malaise. I didn't have the bounce in my step. I had these symptoms. I could feel it. I wasn't showing up to work early. I wasn't staying late. I was avoiding conflicts. I'll leave that for the next day. And so it's like, whoa. And so, I went and I started thinking, okay, I need to do something about this because I'm the guy that brings the energy. And so when I went to the research, I kind of read some things that, like, whoa. The first thing it said is take a break. And that's hard for high performers. They don't want, and a break for high performers is I'm gonna take this afternoon, I'm gonna take this weekend. Yep. And it advocated for a 2-week break, long enough that when you come back, you can't remember your passwords. That's the place, if I was to give you something, it's not a 1-week break, because the 1-week break, you just start the decompressing. It's in that 2-week break, and I recognized in that second week, I started the thinking. The first week was about the resting, but the second week was about the strategic thinking about what am I going to do differently? What needs to change? That was when I started asking the questions and could start formulating the plan, right? Because you can't just do nothing. That doesn't take care of, burnout, right? I needed to restore my cup. I know you speak about dopamine a lot, right? It's like I had to find things that were going to fill that, restore or stimulate my nervous system to build that up. And so then I went to relationships, which is what the research tells. And we, not the Instagram friendships, not the Facebook friends, those ride or dies, those people that, that love you unconditionally, that got your back no matter what. Like, I needed to pick up the phone and do the things that were really, really, I'll say, reinvigorating, that just made me belly laugh, and we forget about that, Then I went to this thing that Csikszentmihalyi, the researcher, the sports psychologist, talks about: flow, meaning hobbies that make time fly.
Yeah,
we don't do enough of that, right? And so I was like, man, I'm getting back out. I'm going to go whitewater canoe, but it's winter. No, I love it. I got the gear. I went back out. I just needed something. And again, no cell phone there. No, nothing there, right? But the biggest and the hardest thing I had to do, Greg, was really look at my job, because so much of my time, like 8, 9, 12 hours a day was in my job. There were certain roadblocks and obstacles that were impacting how I felt about it, what was creating strife and conflict. And I just went and had a heart to heart with my boss. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go there saying, I've got burnout, I need to do something. I said, I'm worn out, I'm tired, you're not getting the best out of me. Here's what I need to do differently. Here's what I need this to look like. And right. I talked about a different structural alignment. I talked about a resource allocation. I didn't ask for money. I didn't ask for resources. And then I asked for a sexy, cool project that would really, like, whoa, something that I was on my bucket list. I talked about building a program, a leadership program that wasn't been done and, like, that I really wanted to do. Now there's a challenge. There's something like a North Star. But there's some quick, easy, I know I'm speaking quickly, but those are some quick, easy tips. And I can feel the difference. A month later, my workers came and was like, you're different after the break. What changed? Right?
Yep.
And I feel it.
Brilliant. And I'd like to dig into each of those a little bit further, if that's okay. So the first thing I want to explore a little bit more is the break. I've been talking about the 1-2-3 rule, 1 hour a day, 2 days a month, and 3 weeks a year, where you give yourself a break. You have no technology, you're in complete recovery and regeneration, so that you can actually rest. And I'm curious how that played out for you. And if you have any tactics that you used to give yourself permission, or that we could use to give ourselves permission to actually take that break so that we can recover and regenerate.
Yeah, great question. Because you use the word give ourselves permission, because as high performers, we feel guilty. If we're not working like and grinding, like what the heck, that's not in our DNA. And so we do have to let go of the guilt. And we have to recognize that giving ourselves a break doesn't mean that we're falling behind if we're using it to sharpen our saw, hone our skills. And so what I did, which was really key, was, you know, my wife and partner, just, I talked with her. I was like, I need to unplug. I need you to help me because I know I'm going to have a tendency to reach for my phone. And I also spoke to my colleagues at work. I'm unplugging. Let's not send each other emails over the break, right? Help me, because I can't help it. I'll want to respond. Right. Yeah. So I'm going to, like, you know what? It's not like I went zero. Like, I didn't go 100%. We're in positions that we have to touch base a little bit, but my phone usage went down like 90-some-odd%. And then the final thing was when I found myself thinking like, oh my God, it's like, stop, you know, the same cues we use, stop it. You're going to be okay. This is good for you. You need this.
Right. Then you mentioned moving beyond the social media connections to the people that you are deeply connected with. And those, importantly, that create the belly laugh, right? Your friends that you can just say something and roll around on the floor, killing yourself laughing. I was on the phone with a friend of mine last night. We were going through some old pictures that we found, and I looked at them and I was like, oh my gosh, we are laughing in almost every single one of those old pictures. Like, those are the deep friendships that you want to really lean into. And as the world opens up again, and as we return to quote unquote to work, or we go back into the schools and we get back into sports, we're discovering that social connections are absolutely critical. And if that's one takeaway from the pandemic, that's actually a good thing. We should definitely lean into that, knowing that humans are connected creatures. We are social creatures. And I'd love for your take on rebuilding and reconnecting with those deep friendships, the people that really fill our cup and elevate us.
Yeah. You know, I've got some great friends, and no different than everybody else's, but we get so busy being parents, trying to advance our career, trying to make sure we're honing and reading all these other sorts of things, reading the next book. We're so busy doing our career that we're forgetting the things that really matter. You know, my wife, who works in the ICU, has told me that the richest, wealthiest people, when they're on their deathbed in the ICU, are always the ones with only one person, maybe two people, seeing them off. Where it's the ones that you would never expect. She talked about this Hell's Angels guy that had 150 people come through, or this lady that was a community member who had a room so packed that they could never get enough people in during the day. And I say that because, what's the difference that we want to make in the world, and who are the people we want to spend it with? And so when I think about that, I reached out to my 50-year-old friends, because guess what? They are experiencing the same sorts of things that I was doing. And we can give ourselves counsel and advice and riff off each other and go to the well to say, you know what? Yeah. You know, I always, you know, we always joke that a married man never wants to go to a single man for advice on marriage. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to your community, your people that know what things that they're going through. And when I pick those people that are in the same stage, other vice presidents, other 50-year-old in the same development perspective, and been vulnerable with them. We don't do that enough. We want to pretend with our true friends sometimes that it's the Instagram, Facebook, perfect Martha Stewart life. When I told a friend about what I was going through and the crisis of identity and just all the things that were happening to me, he shared with me the things that were going on, how his daughter, who's only been married a year, went through a divorce, how something's going on with his identity, how he doesn't sure what his next step is. And all of a sudden, we were in that same space of vulnerability and authenticity, and we could do the work supporting each other.
That is so interesting. So I went down to an event last weekend, to a speaking event, never having been to the location before. It was a 4-day conference. And the first night there was a dinner, I sat down at the table and instantly people were getting into like the real stuff, the uncomfortable stuff. There was very little small talk. It was diving right in. What's really going on? How are you really feeling? And one of those, without question, one of the best dinners I've had in such a long time, because we were really chatting and really trying to help each other. So how do we also then give ourselves permission to open up, to be safe, and to find those trusted people that we're able to deeply connect with and who get us, who move us forwards? And how do we rebuild those relationships? Many of us haven't been in contact with the people that we love. And even, you know, pandemic aside, busy life, it's hard to spend time with people when you've got so much going on. I know that things are getting a little bit better, but I was also thinking that it's really important to go beyond just being busy and actually reconnect with people. Wondering about your thoughts on that.
You know, I think one of the things is we all have a little bit of shame. We all have a little pride. And it's, you know, it's a seven deadly sin. I think in order for somebody else to be vulnerable, to really get to that, we have to be willing to take the risk and share. Now, I'm a 52-year-old man. I've built all these things and all these excellent things. And I've never once saw a counselor until this last month and a half, 6 weeks. I saw a mental health well-being counselor. And when I'm, and you're the, this is the first public place I'm sharing that with. But when I shared that with my friend, I was talking, he's like, I could hear him go quiet. And then all of a sudden, when I thought I was alone, he opened up and shared his struggles. All of a sudden, he's like, this is the first time I've been able to talk about this with somebody outside of my family without crying. If we don't and aren't willing to take the risk to be vulnerable, then we can't expect anybody else to do it. And the thing is that we have to remember with our bestest friends, our loved ones, is they have us unconditionally. They remember us before we were these people with these fancy credentials and initials behind our names. And so what we have to do is let go of worrying about, will they accept me or will they think I, you know, those friends. They're the ones that you fight with, like they're your brothers or your sisters. Sometimes it's cats and dogs, sometimes it's oil and water, but you still come back to them because you've put in the work. And that's gone over years and decades for some of us, that you know that they've got you. But somebody has to take the first step. So why not you?
Unconditional love, unconditional support. And it's quite funny, even just the transition over the last 5 or 6 years, the change that's occurred, because when I used to say the word therapy, when I was doing public speaking engagements, I would encourage people to think about it. And people would react like, whoa, therapy, easy, pump the brakes. Now, it's, I mention it and people are like, what kind? Can you be a little bit more specific? Is it EMDR? Is it CBT? Like, what are we talking about here? Which one should I go to? Things have obviously completely transformed and the stigma has significantly decreased. It's not gone, but it's definitely moving in the right direction. Our evolution in this space has come so far. It's so good to see. And I encourage everyone to think about it. Even if things are going well, it's something that you can look into, because just like you would not, you know, you would ask a personal trainer to figure out and help you get better physically in the gym, you can equally use mental health support to get better mentally. It's exactly the same thing. You're getting expert assistance to improve your mind and your mindset. The other area that we spoke about at the beginning was challenge and coming up with those cool, exciting projects, the interesting things that bring back the spark, the joy, the excitement into your various different aspects of your life. So I want to hear a little bit more about that too, because that's definitely something that we all need to reinstall into our lives as well. Those little magic moments, the sparks, the excitement, the challenge, the things that enable us to push ourselves to do the hard things.
You know, I'm assuming, Greg, you're close to my age in the 50-something range, a little bit more, right? Just a wee bit more. And that whole sense of purpose is, you know, that identity crisis. You know, Erickson will talk about it, you know, in terms of that, the famous psychologist, is what are we doing? And are we generative or are we stagnating? And the thing is that at 50, we kind of like, is this it? Like, are we declining? Are we just stalling? Because we start to see the end, we're not that far away from the end. And so we're all thinking about what's our last big thing. And I see it. I see a lot of my friends are like, I'm a president, but this isn't giving, I'm a vice president, this isn't giving me hope. I'm a president, this isn't giving me what I want. And people are trying to decide, well, what does that look like? And it's not about money or status or title. We spent the first half of our career, 20 some odd years doing that. And now that we've achieved here, we want something that's meaningful. We all want to leave this world better than we found it. That's a mantra of high performers. That's why we became that way. It wasn't about just accumulating wealth and status. It was also about doing work that was meaningful and it created an added value. And so now I'm at this stage and I'm saying to myself, well, what is it? I'm here and, you know, I've got this family and I've got this mortgage and I've got this car payment. And there's sometimes those are handcuffs for me. You know, I'm a little bit of afraid. You remember that book, Who Moved My Cheese? Mm-hmm. What would you do if you weren't afraid? Sometimes I feel that because I've become now that guy, that mouse hem and haw. I feel my shirt is tight. My pants are tight. I'm that fat mouse that's living the good life. And I never made decisions based on safeness or a certain path. My excellence happened because I took risks. I went where I wasn't supposed to go, and great things happened because I was a trailblazer. Is there one more in that, like in there for me? And that's when I went to my boss and said, I need something. I can feel it. I know I'm better when I'm afraid of failing. When something's not supposed to happen, it brings out the best in me. That's my DNA. I don't know for your listeners out there what's in their DNA, but when I listen to that inside voice, right, then I've got something that's making the hair on my back of my neck stand up, making my heart go pitter-patter, then I know I'm where I'm supposed to be.
It is never too late. Even if I just think back 10 years to when I was around 40 versus now, I would never have imagined in a million years that I've done the things that I've done in the last 10 years. I cannot believe that I'm a multiple author. I cannot believe I've commentated a couple of Olympics, that I got tenured at the university, published 75 research papers. Like, it's, if I tried to tell myself that 10 years ago, I would not have believed you. It's pretty cool. And as a result, I fully expect that I have no idea what's coming in the next 10 years. So I'm seeking out, just like you, like, what's the excitement? What's the magic moments? What are the peak experiences that I want to try to have in life, right? One of the interesting things I've been playing around with lately is getting into a flow state more often. When you're in a state of flow, you're doing something that's meaningful to you, where purpose lies. And when we do that, when we're in flow, doing things that are meaningful to us, that's where peak experiences happen that are fundamentally transformative. That's what I'm thinking a lot about. That's what I'm trying to explore. And I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. You know, there's a famous, it just made me think of, I can't remember his name, but there's a famous Chicago architect. I want to say Dunham or something like that. And he has this quote. I know I've got his last name wrong, but the quote is generally, make no small plans. They don't have the magic to stir one's blood. Aim instead in high and hope, right? Something along those lines. That's what it makes me think about, right? When you make small plans, yeah, of course. But make no small, they don't have the magic to stir one's blood. That's what you just told me. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that whole place of flow and purpose and passion, that's the one I will add to it. That's where it happens, because that's when it's no longer a job description. Isn't it, what's his name, Drive, Daniel Pink, that talks about a transcendent purpose, right? And he talks about, you know, Skypes, put a ding in the universe, Steve Jobs, be disruptive in the pursuit of change. Right. Even my wife's hospitals at Southlake, they have that give a damn. Right. Like those are the things, you know, people look at me and think of me as like as a coach, like, oh, you're a high performance. No, I've always talked about my purpose being an educator first and foremost. In fact, the thing that I went to my boss to say is I want to build a program for Black underrepresented socioeconomic disadvantaged students to come to Laurier and come for free, and the goal is to develop Rhodes Scholars. I said, I'm willing to fund 100% of it, right? Yeah. I'd rather take my money and work for free because I want to develop Black Rhodes Scholars. Now I'm going to think about the curriculum. I'm going to think about, wow, I want to wake up and do this every day. I'm so excited about it. That's in my sweet spot, where passion and purpose and flow overlap.
Doc, isn't it cool how we started talking about burnout, yet we landed on massively transformative purpose. And that's what we encourage everyone to think about. What's your massively transformative purpose? Check in to Peter Diamandis' work on that. Peter Diamandis, MTP, massively transformative purpose. He's got some workshops built out on that and worksheets. And we've been through a lot. Like it's been an interesting time. I believe that 1% gains and 1% wins are a path towards building healthy habits. And yet right now, I do feel like it's important to point those 1% gains and 1% wins towards our own massively transformative purpose, whatever it is that matters to us a lot in our lives. That's the direction I want all of us to go. That's the thriving that I want all of us to have and experience in our lives, doing big things with people that we love in areas and tasks, right? The people, places, and pursuits that are absolutely meaningful to us, where we can be in flow doing awesome stuff with awesome people. Anyway, that's Greg ranting. And Dr. Ivan Joseph, I cannot thank you enough for taking your time to hang out with us and to share your wisdom yet again. If people want to connect with you and learn a little bit more, where can they look up your work online?
Oh, find me on LinkedIn at Dr. Ivan Joseph or drivanjoseph.com on my website, or follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm on all the socials. I'd love to connect.
Doc, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You are awesome. Cannot thank you enough.
My pleasure, my friend. All the best.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Dr. Greg Wells Podcast. If you found this show informative and helpful, check out my blog at drgregwells.com for additional insights and resources on health and human performance. I update the blog a couple times a month. To stay up to date on the latest tips, articles, and videos, be sure to follow me on social at Dr. Greg Wells. My goal on social is to keep your health and wellness and positivity at the forefront of your mind, and so I would be thrilled to connect with you there. If you found this episode helpful, please consider subscribing to the podcast. That helps us out a ton. And leave a review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and helps me to continue to produce valuable content that's relevant to all of you. Please feel free to share this episode with your friends and community. That helps a ton as well. And that brings this week's show to an end. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Have a great week, everyone.